My heart has no words. My eyes have no tears left. Mind had done gone crazy. Went off and married my fears. Now I'm standing here with nothing left to tell you. I'm standing here with nothing to prove. I got nothing to prove.
This is Janae, and I wanted to welcome you this evening to another episode of Mormon Expression Voices. I have an interview this evening with a really, really fun individual, and his name's Joey. Joey, say hi.
Hello.
So Joey is another individual. You may have heard another podcast that I did, but Joey's another individual that I have met through what we kind of call, as a euphemism, the BYU atheists, but really it's a community of 20-somethings. They don't have to be atheists, but we kind of all get together. A lot of us are ex-Mormon. Obviously, I'm not in my 20-somethings. But anyway, this is where I met Joey, and he's got a really fun story, and we're going to kind of touch on it and touch on some things and talk tonight. So how are you feeling? Are you feeling okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, cool. Well, Joey, let's establish some Mormon cred. So you were Mormon at one point?
Yes. And of course, still technically I am.
So you haven't resigned yet?
No.
Okay. What about family? Were your parents Mormon?
Not originally. My family are converts, actually.
Really? Really? Yes. Okay. So did they convert before you were born or after?
In between.
Oh, really?
No, it okay. Wasn't, well, not truly in between, but I was about 4 or 5when the missionaries came. So
yeah.
So I was pretty young, so I don't remember most of it.
Okay. So I have a question for you, though.
Yes.
Do you remember getting your name and your blessing to bring you into the church?
I guess I'm not sure what you're referring
to. Question. So just as an aside, I remember, because my mom was a convert, so I remember my stepfather, when they got married, my stepfather gave me essentially the baby's blessing and gave me my name of record in the church. And I was just wondering if you remembered that, because it was such a profound experience
now,
for me.
Yeah, and I don't remember that. I remember going to the temple when my family was sealed, though.
Oh, cool. And when was that? How old were you?
I would have been 5 by that point. I'm pretty sure I was about 4 and a half.
Isn't originally. That like a seriously cool feeling to be young in the temple?
Yes, they had some toys. I think it was in the basement.
Yes.
I don't remember.
Yes.
And then they brought me in, and a couple people were really excited to show me the mirrors.
Oh, yes. So which temple were you sealed to your family?
Chicago Temple.
Oh, really? Really? See, I've been in the Washington, D.C. temple to be sealed to my sister, and I was sealed to my family in Provo. So Chicago sounds cool. So that was a trip for your family, though. Because where's your family? Where were you guys based
out of? Northern Michigan. Way up in the UP.
So you weren't a Utah Mormon.
No, not at all. I grew up in St. Ignace, in the eastern part of the Upper Peninsula. So really close to Canada, just about 50 miles away.
Really? Well, that explains some of your accent.
Exactly.
I've always loved your accent.
Some people love how I say agnostic.
Oh, okay. Cool.
The rest of it's just really hick, though.
No. Having lived in Texas, I can tell you that's not hick. So when your parents, do you think converting for your parents, do you think that had any benefits for your parents? Do you feel like they did anything for your family?
For my family, yes. At that point, my brother was away at college already. There's a pretty good age gap.
Wow.
So my mom wanted to be a career woman. So he really wasn't planned, is what she and he told me when I grew up. And I think I was probably thought of only about 7 or 6 months before I was born.
Oops.
So I wasn't planned either. And that's why we're so far apart. But he was at college, and when the missionary showed up, there was a few things that led up to that, but that's kind of a long story. But essentially, on a road trip, my dad stopped by a visiting center, I believe is what happened, and he left our name and address, and my family and me were still on the road trip for a few months after that, and the missionaries were dropping by every single time, and they had to drive like 70 miles round trip to get to our house out in the middle of nowhere.
There's a commitment.
It was, actually, and we're still in contact with a lot of the missionaries who worked with us at the beginning, some of them here in Utah, actually.
That's wonderful. So your family converted, your mom, your dad, and obviously you were young enough that you were just kind of fed right into the primary, the primary stream.
They came from Lutheran and Catholic backgrounds, and I have very little memory of that. Most of my memory with religion would be with the LDS Church.
Wow. So now, are your parents still in the faith?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you grow up in the faith, sounds like. You went to high school, faithful LDS? Did you have a shelf that you'd been putting stuff on? How were you feeling?
Not really in high school. Growing up out in the mission field, a lot of stuff doesn't get brought up, actually.
Not in Michigan.
Not in Michigan. Most people don't know enough to ask the questions.
Sure.
And I was never really... I was fine in my faith. I wouldn't say I was a true believing Mormon, TBM,
Maybe liberal? Liberal Mormon?
Slightly liberal,
a little bit.
But my parents are slightly liberal as well. So growing up with the church and going to high school and stuff, I generally fit in pretty well with non-members. Number one, because there's rarely any other members.
Sure.
Who are in high school or junior high. And the other reason, just because being in an active family, my dad did become branch president really quick.
My gosh.
My brother came home to save me because he thought the family was joining a cult, but he ended up joining too and went to the Philippines on a mission. So
really?
So we were active, but definitely more liberal-minded.
So you guys were in a branch then, sounds
like. Yes. Actually, it still is a branch in a mission district up there. It's not a stake. It's too small to be a stake.
Wow. That is gorgeous country. If there's anything that's God's country, it is up there.
Yeah, there's the joke about long-distance calls to heaven, and the UP is a local line, so
absolutely.
I don't need to run through the joke.
I get the point. So sounds like high school, you didn't really have a lot of questions about your faith.
No, not at all, but that was mainly because a lot of it just didn't get brought up.
Sure. So where did you end up? So you graduate from high school. Were you planning on going to, did you go straight into a mission? Were you planning on going to college? What was the thought?
I was always planning on going on a mission, I was still 18, of course, when I graduated from high school. So I went to BYU, actually, for two semesters, a full year.
Before you went on your mission?
Before I went on my mission, yes.
Okay. So had you ever been to Zion?
No. Been to the Rockies and been out west, but never to Utah, not since being LDS, and hadn't been around that many LDS people, except for maybe, like a district activity or going to Kirtland on a trip. That was like coming out to Utah was the first time really being thrown into what you could say is maybe a Mormon culture.
Interesting. So let's walk back just a teeny bit, because I just have a quick question. In Michigan, were there a lot of young adult activities? Do you feel like the young adults were, kind of courted?
Not too many, because there's just not that many members, and they're all spread out.
Sure.
I would say, like, in the way the district's set up now, if more secondhand, since I don't live there, I think from where I'm at, we have to travel about 50 miles north to go to the branch that my family's a part of now. And if I wanted to go to the district center, it'd be about 2-hour drive going southwest. So it's all spread out. So there's not very many activities, but when there would be an activity, lots of people would try to make sure it happened, such as random members of the local branch offering to drive the kids instead of the parents having to and such like that. So
that's awesome.
So in the sense of meeting the youth and hanging out whenever there was something, which there might only be like four events a year,
sure.
It was usually a good fun activity.
Wow. Well, that sounds fun. So you went to BYU. You obviously, or did your parents drive you out or did you fly in?
I drove with my dad.
Oh, cool. Cool.
It's a 24-hour trip.
Wow.
So it's not really fun to try to, actually, that's wrong. It's about a 27-hour trip.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dallas is 24.
Yeah, you got to split it into 2 days, and they're long days.
Yeah,
it would probably be best to have like a 3-day
Absolutely.
Trip.
Well, so you get here, you're in Zion.
Yep.
You drive into Provo. So where'd you stay? What did you stay in the dorms?
I stayed in DT, Deseret Towers.
Yes, Deseret Towers.
I was in
which hall?
Hall.
Okay, I was in
Southwest
S.
Corner.
Awesome. So did you have a shared room?
Yes, I did.
And did you know who you were? Did you have?
Nope. I think.
So you just let them assign you somebody.
I did.
Awesome.
And I tried to get them to assign me somebody who wasn't going to stay up all night, but that didn't actually happen.
Oh.
And I asked him later, and he said that he actually. Said that he usually goes to bed about 11 or 12, but he usually would go to bed about 4 or 5.
Oh, wow. So, that's tough.
So that was a problem, but I still am friends with any roommates I've had. So.
Well, that's fantastic. So how did BYU feel? What was your initial, so you go to freshman orientation. What were you feeling? What kind of feelings did you have?
At that point with freshman orientation still, it felt like summer camp. Like I had done summer camps to different college campuses for different types of camps.
And,
you know, you get an orientation at the beginning to like show you where buildings are, or if they have buses and stuff that go.
Sure.
What am I thinking?
Transportation.
Yeah, public transportation for the students.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So it felt like that at first.
Okay.
Just any normal type of, here's the campus where you're going to be spending the next few weeks type of walk around. And some of the orientation people I was with were pretty goofy. And it was, so at that point, it was still kind of like, oh, this is exciting.
And fun.
I'm at BYU.
And, yeah.
There's lots of Mormons. Oh, this will be fun to be around lots more people who have the same belief system as me.
Well, and it's not easy to get into the Y.
No, not necessarily. I have okay grades. I'm a procrastinator, but I also had a lot of extracurricular activities in high school, so.
Well, congratulations. I mean, that should be something that you should be proud of, if not, you know. So it sounds like you were excited, but it doesn't necessarily sound like you stayed that way.
No.
So what was kind of the next feeling? What was different?
Well, with that, I mean, you growing up, in a mission district, especially nobody else in your high school. I mean, you have to grow to, you know, accept, not just tolerate other people for who they are. Growing up, one of my friends, Matt, who Native American friend and in high school, and he decided he wanted to drink too and stuff like that. But he was also a really close friend, and I could confide in him if I had any problems or secrets and vice versa. And really, he was probably one of my closest friends in high school. Another friend, Nathan, ended up coming out gay.
Okay.
And with my family, just because of family history being accepting, that was never going to be an issue with my family or me in that case. And so having two close friends, one of them being Native American, who eventually just became an atheist, and the other one... coming out as gay or homosexual.
Sure.
It was either, oh, I don't want to be your friend anymore, or yes, I'll just be your friend and I'll just accept you for who you are, even if maybe my belief system in religion and in God doesn't fully agree with your quote-unquote lifestyle.
So at that point, you still were bought into the church's teachings as far as homosexuality and lifestyle and stuff, and you kind of had to round that corner.
Again, it wasn't that big of a deal because it never really came up.
Sure. So now you tell me that story. Now contrast that to BYU. Is that what you're showing?
Yeah, so I get to BYU, and then I find out there's, you know, issues with this.
With being accepting.
With, yeah, where people maybe don't even want to tolerate you. So being the only LDS kid by the time I graduated in high school, you know, I would swear and stuff like that.
Oh.
Maybe I would talk about things that normal Mormon people in a Mormon culture wouldn't. And so some people would either just correct me in person or would not hang around me very often, or with other things such as like bringing up that I had a gay friend. Some people would be like, oh yeah, I do too. You know, other maybe non-Utah residents or East Coast friends. And then vice versa, there'd be some other people there who would say, would start bashing gays or such. Oh. This was before Prop 8.
Sure.
So it wasn't that big, but kind of being thrown into it, suddenly I was seeing more of the other side. That.
So I guess what I'm hearing is maybe the homogeneity of the campus and that feeling that everybody feels like the way we do and it's the right way. Is
yes.
that kind of what you kind of hit up against and maybe it felt uncomfortable?
Yeah, it felt a little bit more judgmental.
Okay.
It did feel a little bit uncomfortable. And on some levels, it also seemed like I would either have to get along with some people at BYU, some possible new friends, I might have to kind of forsake some old friends.
Oh.
Not that they would phrase it that way or necessarily think that's what's going on. You know, a lot of this is kind of subtle and indirect. You know, it's not like people come out and tell you that to your face or even think it, but the being thrown into such a Mormon culture like that, you kind of it kind of wears you down.
And maybe you had some nagging feelings in the back that, oh, I didn't really know I was signing up for this.
Yes, and some of that was getting to BYU. I had never heard about garments before.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No way. That's not the
lots really? Of people, at least for my experience growing up in the mission field, lots of people thought there was no polygamy in the church. So taking a couple religion classes, suddenly polygamy is definitely did happen with Brigham Young and Joseph Smith.
Was that a shocker?
I had already heard it enough that I thought it could be true, but it was kind of interesting to get to BYU and everybody just accepts it or professors talk about it or such.
So you think your mom would have bought into that?
Her?
Yeah.
If she knew about that at first?
Yeah.
I don't even know if she fully knows about it right now.
Well, I was
exactly.
just...
Exactly.
I mean, because just from conversation, she seems like a pretty strong,
she's
independent...
She's kind of a feminist.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mentioned she wanted to be a career woman. With the church, for my family, a lot of the reason that they would continue to stay in, if they maybe had the mindset... excuse me. If they had the mindset that I have right now, would be that, at least for my parents and for raising me and then my brother too, it was a pretty good experience. It helped to pull the family closer.
Sure.
Helped my parents to get along a little bit more, and it helped
That's
them
great.
To know how to raise me, because in their words, they would say they've made a few mistakes on my brother on the first try. And with the church, it kind of helped in that sense.
Okay.
And that's why I would say my experience overall was pretty good, too, because, like I mentioned, because of the way they were raised and their life experiences, being raised in the church, I got a lot more of the good and then some of the bad stuff that I would disagree with, such as, like, Prop 8 never truly got ingrained into me because my parents never ingrained it into me.
Well, and it doesn't sound like it really ever came up or got really pushed,
no.
even in your district.
No, most, like I mentioned, most, there'd be, I'd say probably growing up, half the time polygamy would even be mentioned was just that it wasn't happening. Just because
okay.
these people, not that they're lying, they just, I would assume, don't know.
Okay. So you're at BYU for two semesters.
Mm-hmm.
You got a little bit of discomfort in the back of your head, but you're still Mormon? You're still going
yes.
to church?
Yep.
You're
overall,
still good?
Overall, it strengthened my testimony, but it did get that the cliched shelf
okay.
got set up while I was at BYU, and I put a couple things on it.
Okay, cool. So at that point, did you still want to go on a mission?
Yes.
Okay, so you put in your papers,
yep.
and you received a call.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, that's great. So how did you feel about that? Was that, had you been to Nashville before?
Through the area, when I was young, so I didn't remember it, in any way. And I don't know if we actually went to Nashville itself.
Okay.
My brother went to the Philippines. I think I mentioned that.
Yes.
At the beginning.
Yes.
So me going to Nashville, definitely not that far away. My mom was really happy. I was a little disappointed. But I would have liked to go to Europe or maybe...
Nashville's got to be pretty hot with garments.
Yes. Actually, Nashville itself is kind of like in a bowl region. It's got higher humidity. So Nashville and kind of the surrounding area around it generally has a higher temperature, higher humidity than even going maybe 100 miles south.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty warm there.
Wow. So you went through the temple.
Yep, that was an experience.
So were you prepared, do you think?
Not really.
Okay. So,
but I was, I would say in the months leading up to my mission, definitely the first half of my mission, that was the strongest point for me with believing the church.
Okay.
And my testimony and just kind of everything, I would say. And
so you were feeling good and you were feeling focused and you were doing the Lord's work.
And so the temple was definitely an experience, but wasn't bad at that point.
Okay, cool, cool. So the question I would have at this point was... did you finish your mission faithfully?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely not as strong as I started, though.
Well,
I think that's the same for a lot of people.
It's very stressful.
Well,
it is very stressful.
Andrew is one of my friends, and you just interviewed him a little bit ago, and
yes.
I listened to that one. And I definitely served a much more obedient mission than he did, at least for that first half.
So you get back home off your mission. Did you still want to go to BYU?
Well, at that point, yes.
Okay.
But the mission definitely had a pretty big change for me in my attitude towards the church, and going to Nashville especially and just being in the South, that's where I got a lot of anti thrown at me.
So when you say anti, do you mean anti like lies that were obvious lies based on the information you know now, or were they kind of a lot of truths you just weren't aware of, or what?
Unfortunately, both, and I'll explain that.
Okay.
In my experience, still some of the best places to go would just be books from Deseret to get facts, and then go from there to delve a little bit deeper, because usually they'll leave out the worst of it. And to avoid evangelical works or articles, because those are going to be the ones that generally exaggerate or spin or even sometimes outright lies. Hearing a lot of that, the second half of my mission, I started reading a lot of books. I ordered a lot from Deseret. I bought some from bookstores, such as Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling.
Okay.
And so that was kind of a shocker in a sense, too, because reading that book, he brought up a lot of things that I had heard about. Some of the things that were on the shelf, some of the things that people said weren't necessarily true, and he brought them up as if, yeah, well, you know, they're putting a spin on it, but this is what really happened. You know, not only the polygamy, but the polyandry, issues with the Book of Mormon, Kinderhook plates, you know.
So was it faith promoting?
And I hate to say this because I hear he hates hearing this, but no, Rough Stone Rolling was not faith promoting, but I would say it was probably not faith promoting for me because I have been told that some of the things he talked about were anti- quote-unquote anti-lies.
And then to find out that they were true.
And then to find out they were
was
true.
Was pretty, I mean, I don't want to overuse the word, but it was shocking.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
So I mainly share that. We don't need to go into my deconversion story necessarily.
Sure,
but
sure.
I mainly share that to say that by the time I got off my mission, going back to BYU was a lot different than the first time I went there.
So let's talk about that. You step foot back on BYU campus. Are you staying in the dorms again?
No.
Okay.
Took me a moment. No. I went and I was at Old Mill by that point.
Okay.
Actually,
okay.
Which is an old apartment complex. At least it feels like it.
Hey, let me tell you. When I was there, when the dinosaurs were roaming, that was like the primo place because it was brand new.
Old Mill?
Yeah. That's how old it is.
I won't even venture a number.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
not live, anyways.
But anyway, so that
it's, did you stay at Old Mill?
No, I couldn't afford.
Did you go there?
No, I couldn't afford Old Mill.
They have shared showers between the rooms.
Oh, really?
It's kind of weird.
Okay. Well, so what was your first feeling as you step back on the campus and you know you're going to immerse yourself back into this? Were you feeling like, I'm back, I'm safe, I'm here with my people? Were you feeling that, or how were you feeling?
I was in a lot of ways. I got back and I didn't get everything in order to go back to BYU right away. So I spent winter semester at home, which was really lonely. I'm in the middle of nowhere when all your friends you grew up with generally aren't in the town anymore, or they're long gone off to college still. And so I actually went out to BYU about a month before classes even started. And there was enough of my friends by that point that were back or were just still there. And so getting back to BYU was kind of an escape, but probably just because I was feeling so cooped up at home by that point.
Yeah, you were lonely.
Yeah. And I get back and...
First family home evening.
First family home evening and all that jazz. And, you know, before the mission, it was those once every far in between youth trips, going to BYU, kind of being a little annoyed, and a little upset at the culture that persisted.
Okay.
Going on my mission, getting really back into it, really increasing my testimony. Second half kind of going downhill a little bit. And then getting back to BYU and suddenly feeling a little out of place again.
Okay. So maybe some liberal thoughts had crept in?
By that point, I mean, Prop 8 had happened by that point.
Okay.
That never sat right with me.
Gotcha.
And being home after the mission and such, talking with Nathan too.
And seeing how it affected a real person.
Yeah, one of my best friends.
Sure.
He would be the person from high school that I've kept in contact with the most. And, you know, having Prop 8 kind of being put between us.
Right.
Because whether or not I fully agree with it, I'm still part of a church that actively...
Did he know that your church had supported it?
Yes. I mean, everybody. I would say everybody knows that.
Even over in Michigan?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Was that hard to look him in the eyes and realize?
There were a couple moments. I would say it wasn't too difficult, but I mean, It was obvious that it had caused a slight rift between us.
Sure. That would be painful. Wow. So you get back. It's not the same. Doesn't sound like. You're starting to see things that I'm hearing maybe made you feel uncomfortable, or you're kind of annoyed maybe with the homogeneity and the, oh yeah, the whole world thinks like we do.
Yes. And by that point, just knowing a lot of the topics that generally start turning people away from the church, especially with like the history or the actions.
Sure.
Seeing some issues with a few of the doctrines.
Sure.
At that point already, women's rights had kind of come up. Having my mom.
Sure.
I don't think she'd call herself a feminist, but being a strong, independent woman, that kind of blinded me to a lot of the feminist issues or women's rights issues. But after my mission, that was another one that got brought
up. That really surprises me, because me knowing you, you are very sensitive to women's issues.
I'm sensitive to a lot of issues.
Yeah. So.
And I get hot-headed over a lot of things.
Well, but that's not a bad thing. So, were you uncomfortable in...
Yes, but I guess I would have to say after getting back to BYU, it was probably only about 2 months later that I really admitted that I was losing my testimony. And it wasn't even, I had been working the history and stuff out, like polygamy's in the Bible. So I somehow threw the loop. Oh, if it's in the Bible, it's okay that it happened.
Sure.
Move those things aside. But I started running into some real strong issues just with basic fundamental principles of faith in general.
Sure.
And so I really started having a lot of more agnostic or atheistic thoughts.
Okay.
And by June, I approached my bishop about it. And then that started a good year of just kind of a roller coaster of up and down.
Oh. So did you feel guilty about having those kind of thoughts?
Yes. I would have, well, now that I'm thinking about it, I was going to say it was one of the you know, the second or most horrible time of my life in the sense of just feeling bad all the time, but it's probably not that bad, probably like the third or fourth, but still over, I mean, a whole year of that, talking with a stake president, not the stake president, but his counselor, talking to a couple former missionary companions, even mentioning it to my parents, talking to a few of my friends. And there was plenty of people who stood by me, and who are still my friends. From that time period. But that time period was also where I realized that, you know, having a friend who's losing faith and is, and maybe has some decent arguments that there's no real good answers for, especially like bringing up church history points that the average BYU student doesn't know. Some of them treat you like the plague,
sure.
I think, and leave you because they will view their testimony as more important than your friendship.
Sure.
So.
Okay.
Not a happy time.
So, did you go back home?
No. Actually, I haven't been home for like a summer or spring or anything except just little week or weekend trips.
Okay.
Since coming back from my mission.
Wow. So, you're in Provo. You're not feeling real comfortable. Sounds like you're struggling. You realize your testimony is either non-existent or very, very brittle. How are you coping? What are you doing?
From a, like, trying to promote my faith perspective, read the Book of Mormon again, tried to finish the New Testament and Jesus the Christ. I got a few more books from Deseret, including Holding Fast, which is the, I think, one of the only books that I found that kind of approaches the issue of just losing faith. You know, not losing faith in necessarily, like, if Joseph Smith's a prophet or not living the gospel, but just losing faith in general and, like, Jesus Christ or such.
And did that help you?
Not at all at that point, actually.
Oh, you were too far gone.
I was too far gone. I had, at that point, I had actually already read a couple atheistic books.
So
I had read a couple of books from other religions and just saw kind of what I saw when I went to Nashville, being introduced to a lot of different religions, a lot of different Christian religions, especially just seeing a lot of similarities that weren't answering the issues I was having.
Mm.
And so, and, you know, I was getting to the point, too. I was thinking that I should probably just try to find somebody to marry in the temple right away.
Oh,
I literally.
Ouch.
Yep. And that lasted for about a month where I really thought that. So it's good that it didn't happen, because if I had met somebody at that time, I probably wouldn't be here. Or sure. If I was, maybe I'd be going through a divorce right now, and that wouldn't be any good either.
So the thought process was, I'll get a faithful member, I'll marry her, we'll start a family, we'll immerse ourselves in the LDS church's concept of the eternal family, and I won't have problems with my faith anymore.
And have kids to hold it all together.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I went through that whole, I wouldn't have phrased it that way at the time, but yeah, that's exactly. And I know a few other people have done that, and some people probably have gone all the way with that. And maybe that's helped them if they got back into the church and they can hold their family together. But I think we've heard, even on some of these podcasts, some people where it didn't work out. So I'm glad that that didn't happen for me.
Sure. Sure. So here we start kind of the conversation that brought us together.
Yes.
And that is, at this point, you're agnostic, at least in some part. Did you maintain an ecclesiastical endorsement through this time?
Yes. Yes.
And you continue to go to BYU?
Yes. By this point, I would say we were probably into a year after I got there, the following winter semester.
And so technically you're still being faithful to the honor code, but you're struggling.
Yes.
Is that?
And not even technically. I was still following the honor code at that point.
But having faith issues.
But having faith issues.
Because, you know, part of the honor code is thought crimes.
Yes.
Are.
And then, like I mentioned, just bringing up with the bishop, I also spoke with a state counselor. My endorsement was regularly brought up. Now that I'm looking back on it, I'm thinking they felt like they probably should check to make sure I wasn't doing anything against the honor code. I don't know if they just feel that way or if that's something they kind of have to do, being
sure.
a bishopric at BYU, if that's like a requirement.
But you feel like, as far as physically and your activities, you were honorable in your sustaining of the honor code.
Yes, and even after, really, I lost my faith. For a good while after, I felt like if I'm going to be at BYU, maybe I'll try to lie my way with saying I'm believing, but I'll try to follow the code so they can't really kick me out, and I'm not necessarily like corrupting everybody else around me.
Sure.
But that, I guess, a side thought to everything I'm saying, it would be pretty hard for me to corrupt everybody, because I guess if you can tell, at that point I was getting very slim on friends or people who would want to hang out with me. I'm always feeling judged. I'm always being watched and followed up on. And the issues are actually getting worse. The answers that I'm getting from the church, from the books in Deseret, from people trying to work with me are just getting... they're not answering the questions. They're just telling me to kind of blindly go into it. And especially by that point, culturally, I was not matching anymore.
So you were different. And you knew you were different.
And I knew I was different. Actually, the last time I went to church was the moment I realized I didn't fit in anymore. I've told a couple people this. I guess, tongue in cheek, I was offended, and that's why I stopped going to church. I was teaching a Sunday school lesson, and one of the kids, I don't even know how it got brought up, but Prop 8 or homosexuality got brought up or something. And one of the kids, I'm not sure if he even knows what he's saying. I definitely don't think he meant it, but just the reaction from what he said is what really turned me away. And he made a comment, a joke about sticking gays to the curb.
Oh,
yes,
boy.
Yes. Oh, that's wow. What you get with college kids. And so I don't think this kid, I've hung out with him before, when I was active.
He probably didn't really realize what he was saying and how hateful it was.
I don't think so. But
you knew how hateful it was.
And lots of people laughed.
Oh.
So I knew how hateful it was. Lots of people laughed. A couple people got upset, mainly a group of girls, actually, with their tender female hearts, you know, in the church. Their sweet spirits. So good for them, though, to...
To try to stand up against
yes.
this guy.
And unfortunately, I didn't. I didn't know what to say. So.
And that's a very uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, it was. And I was teaching the lesson, too.
You're supposed to be the man in charge.
Yep. I didn't even know what to do, so I just continued talking.
So did you feel at that point, you kind of looked around the room and you're like, why am I here and what am I doing?
It was right after, actually. I did have that moment when we finished and I was standing there and everybody was talking, getting ready for third hour and everything. And I had that thought. I was like, you know what? I don't fit in anymore.
Wow.
So, you know, that's tongue in cheek. I don't want people to misrepresent me. Being offended didn't really turn me away, but that's what sparked that.
But you knew these weren't your people anymore.
Exactly.
And you knew you didn't want to be represented by these types of thoughts and attitudes.
Exactly.
Wow. That's tough. So let's talk about what you started doing to speak out. You can't speak out on campus.
No.
You can't vocalize any of these feelings to anybody around you, because then you are breaking the honor code.
Exactly. And even trying to get like more secular ideas or not as stringent or strict opinions on moral matters or ethical matters, that was kind of what teaching the class was kind of helping with.
Uh-huh.
Trying to get across a more liberal viewpoint through the lessons.
Subtly.
Subtly, yes. But, you know, after that happening at church and not feeling like I fit anymore, that even more just separated me from everybody.
So is that where you decided to start blogging?
No.
Okay. Tell me what your goal was with the blog.
With the blog?
Yeah. What were you trying to get out of it for you?
I think I have to explain a couple steps.
Okay.
To get to that.
Go for it.
Or else it won't make sense.
Go for it.
Okay, so getting up to the blog, getting up to meeting new people, that following spring, I woke up one day, almost quite literally, but not, and decided I just didn't believe anymore. I would have said I was an atheist at that point. I think it's a little bit more complicated than now.
That's a painful day, though.
For me, though, it was a liberating moment.
Good. Okay.
But then it did become more painful for a while.
Sure. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
Realizing how alone I would be for that. So then I started coming out to some friends. Some of those people were people that I met on the mission.
Okay.
And some of them were families or members that I met on the mission. Some were friends from home and such. And this eventually led me with some of those people to finding the Atheists of Utah or the Atheists of Salt Lake City group.
Sure, sure.
And still, you know, calling myself an atheist at that point, I decided to go out there. And at that point, I met a couple people. And one of them, a friend of mine now, he informed me about a group down at BYU, an underground group, actually, kind of a clique of friends, where some of them were going to BYU, later finding out not all of them were at BYU.
Now, were you still going to BYU at the time?
Yes, I was. And I would be for another year at this point.
Okay.
But they told me about them, and it took me a while to work it up because, you know, going out to the atheist thing, it was definitely out of the norm for me with, like, you know, wasn't like church at all, and it's people with different views, and I was really new to that whole type of a culture, that type of thinking.
It's hard to be accepting of all kinds of views.
Yes. Yes, it is. I would say impossible, but there's some that, you know, if you... Yeah, I'll leave it at that for
yep.
right now.
Yep.
This isn't a philosophical discussion.
But it's definitely stretching yourself. And you knew you were going to get stretched when you walked in there.
And I did. And especially that summer, I was really trying to push myself. So eventually I got out to meet that group, like a group of 30 people all together on Facebook. Really a good close, like dozen half friends or so.
And this is the fledgling group. The BYU...
Not exactly yet.
Oh, okay.
This is even before Andrew was there.
Oh, okay.
One person who doesn't mind his name being mentioned would be Randy.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know Randy.
Yeah,
lots
Randy's
of people know
awesome.
Randy is a good guy. He watches out for people, too.
Absolutely.
he definitely does a little bit of what you do in the sense of parental supervision.
Yep.
A little bit to make sure people are doing okay.
And need the support and have support when they need it.
Exactly. And so went to his house. They had a camp out, met a bunch of people. And that's actually what really sparked me to get into my blog. Was meeting these people. That was really the moment that I really probably felt truly liberated. Back in April, I felt liberated. But like I said, it was kind of still up and down because I was still so alone. And then meeting all these people, making friends, realizing lots of people were at BYU as well.
Did that surprise you?
Yes, it did. I didn't think that there would be an organized group. And they weren't truly organized. Like I said, it was like a lot of friends mainly. And they at least back then, it wasn't so big that everybody was reaching out, and Andrew hadn't showed up to make a more easily accessible group on Facebook.
Sure.
Like with the public face and then the secret side.
Yeah.
But meeting them and everything, that's what went into the blog. I decided I wanted to blog about my experiences, kind of do random, very haphazard journal writing, not consistent by any means. And I felt like the blog could kind of be something like that, just to kind of put down some of my thoughts and my experiences. And then at the same time, though, the second part of that was when I started the blog, I already knew about other blogs.
Okay.
One of the persons that I came out to for my mission, Tara, she got me into blogs, LDS, ex-Mormon blogs and LDS blogs. And she was the one who kind of introduced me to that whole realm online. So when I got to the blog, I decided I would make it, but I wanted to set myself a little bit different than everybody else, especially being a BYU student. So I decided I would focus on my experiences at BYU. And then second, I thought, well, maybe I could make the name or... make post names and maybe take pictures that I know will get lots of hits so that maybe if there's BYU students who do Google searches and such, because at that point I'd already been doing searches, they'll find my blog and then maybe find me. And
because you were trying to reach out.
That was like I said, though, at that point it was very in the back of my mind. I'll just, you know, as kind of a secondary thought, I'll try to make it accessible or easily accessible.
Sure.
For people who do certain Google searches and such. Of course, that's end up kind of becoming the main reason for the blog.
So what's the name of the blog?
Godless at BYU. If you search for atheism at BYU, atheist at BYU, godless at BYU, ex-Mormon at BYU, post-Mormon at BYU, it's going to be right up there at the top on the first page. For some of those, it will be several of the top search results. So it is pretty easily accessible for people who do those types of search. Some of the searches I get are really bizarre, actually. Like, just, I don't know how my blog gets pulled up for some of these searches people do.
Wow.
So I always try to check to see what people are searching for. And so sometimes I've actually made posts named after that. Like, one post was underground group at BYU. Another post, I think, I was more specific, like underground atheist group at BYU. And those types of posts also get hits based off those searches. So
wow.
I ended up trying to focus on that.
So you develop a blog, godless at BYU.
Yep.
I mean, that's throwing it out there.
Yes, I was a little scared about it, too. I was worried that they would find out about me. And BYU did block it within a month or two of me putting it up.
Really? A month or two?
Yep. It was pretty quick. Well, actually, I guess getting to the point, by the end of September, I was getting dozens of hits a day.
Really?
And so it did get kind of, it got brought out. You know, there's probably a decent amount of people just stumbling upon it by accident. By the end of September too, I would say there's probably about a half dozen people by that point who had joined the group through my blog. And of course,
so wait. So you're telling me that people hit godless at BYU. They read a couple entries in the blog.
Very, very second rate entries.
And at that point, when you say they came into the group because of your blog, how are they getting from the group to the blog to the group?
I have my email on
there. Okay.
And maybe towards the end we can explain
Sure. Like
some of the the architecture of the blog.
Sure.
But I have my email on there, and at that point I was a little bit more loose on letting people into the group. But because like I said, that group that I joined originally, I got welcomed into that group. I also felt like I shouldn't just add people into it on Facebook, especially unless I meet them in person or something.
Mm-hmm.
So me and a couple other people from the group usually would like grab dinner or go get ice cream or yogurt. And if somebody contacted me on my blog, we'd go try to meet them. And some people ended up being just in apartment complexes right next to Old Mill and such.
Wow. You
know, people right next door. So.
And they were reaching out because they were essentially just like you.
Yes.
And
in a lot of cases, people who felt a little alone, people who either were struggling and they felt like they couldn't share any of their feelings of disaffection with the church, or people feeling alone at BYU because they had doubts, or people who felt alone because they had become atheist or post-Mormons.
Sure.
And they knew they couldn't share that with their family or friends.
Yeah.
Some people can handle it. That was not my experience, so I don't know how they do it. But a lot of people can't. They feel completely alone, disconnected. They don't have anybody to talk to. And so if they stumble across my blog and they see my post and such about talking about a group or finding friends and having a support group in a sense, I think that's probably a lot of the reason for a lot of the people emailing me in the first place.
Wow. So how did that feel when you got your first email? Were you surprised that anybody was on it, or did you assume people were going to find it? How did you feel?
I was excited. One person ended up, I told a few people, there was a few people from my mission. Like I said, like Tara, I had told her right away.
Oh, sure.
There was a couple other people who definitely had a pretty strong influence on introducing a couple thoughts to me on my mission, and then just talking to me, especially during that doubting phase, and then following on my blog, like Rob as well. I definitely have to give him props. He made lots of comments earlier, especially when I entered my bitter phase that fall. And I posted lots of really silly posts on it.
Bitter's the worst.
And he was the one who told me, you know what, you're 3 months down the road, you're going to look back at these and just think you're stupid. and I was smart enough to recognize. I was like, you're probably right. But he also said, I'll just let you do it, though. Let me argue with you, but I'm not going to take away your quote unquote anger phase or your bitter phase.
Because it's part of the grieving process.
Yes. You know, it was by that point that I really realized how influenced I was. You know, by that fall, making new friends, the group getting bigger. By October with Andrew finding us and then finding other people and making the Facebook group more public, more people coming through the blog. After a while, you realize how much influence the church had on you. And then you start looking back and then you start seeing issues like my friend Nathan, where Prop 8 got between us and, you know, I never apologized for it or anything.
Mm.
You know, and you start looking back and you realize that I never agreed with it, but yet I stood up for it and it caused some issues between me and a really close friend. And, you know, so I think it's pretty normal for most people to, when they leave the LDS church, that they're going to have a hard time just because of how much influence it had on them.
And how much you stood up for things that maybe subconsciously
Exactly. You
felt a little smarmy about.
Yeah.
But you felt obligated to stand up for it because it was the church.
Yes, definitely.
And you knew the church was right and you questioned yourself.
And then having a group to go to, like a secret underground group, not all atheists, like you mentioned, it's not just only atheists in the group, though a lot of us are.
Sure.
And
but you can be theist. You can be deist, pagan. We got a Wiccan.
Yeah. There's a couple Wiccan people.
So I mean,
some spiritual people, pantheists. You know.
Yeah.
But my comment with that is saying that once you get that group, suddenly you feel like because you have friends backing you, because you suddenly have a new group of friends, and really that's all the group's really good for. I would say there's no real organization to it. It's a good way to meet lots of people and then maybe find some new groups of friends or find another person to go rock climbing with or go camping with or Game of Thrones fans, you know,
sure.
Something like that, to get a new circle of friends that you can be open with that will inspire you to maybe stand up for some of those things that you wouldn't normally. And of course, that kind of gets moved along by everybody loving your post and liking them on Facebook. If you come in and say that, oh, I stood up for you know, this issue or this opinion in my class today and all by myself, and everybody's like, yeah, go you, like a boss,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Or
well, you did that with your son.
Yes.
On one of the other groups. Well, no, you posted in the group too.
Yes, yes.
Standing up for evolution, which we would.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. It's sad that, you know, unfortunately, that's something we still have to do.
And I'll separate myself because, like you said, I'm definitely hot-headed. You know, I hate hypocrisy. So when I see it, I can't help it. Or if something gets under my skin. And sometimes it's not always right for me to do that. But I would say the group, for some people who, for it's easy, helps them to get a new group of friends. Like you mentioned, I guess I should stress this, UVU, lots of people at UVU who are post-mo or atheists are in the group. You're in the group, you know, there's plenty of people not at BYU, people with families who are in the group, though a lot of college age kids. So
yes.
Sometimes I don't know how welcome people feel and maybe that's our fault to some extent, but, you know, some people it's easy. So it offers them new friends, new circles. For some people like me, I think it helps them to finally be okay with themselves, to give them that bit of strength and to have a new circle of friends that you can actually be open with. Like I mentioned, I still have plenty of LDS friends, but there's some things that obviously we don't talk about, or that we don't get along, or.
And there's things you just can't broach.
Exactly.
There's just conversations that are difficult concepts. They just can't discuss it in depth. Because it's not faith promoting.
Yeah. You know, I'll never start bashing my friends over. We've talked about the homosexuality a lot. That played a part, but I mean, I guess it's just an example we keep bringing up.
Sure.
But if, you know, I'm never going to start bashing my LDS friends over Prop 8, but if they start making comments about sticking gays to the curb, then I might have to just state my views and argue with them, just because that's to me that's not acceptable.
And now you have other people that will back you up.
Exactly. For the group, there's for other people who have had a really hard time. Who is the one person that got on here? Her story.
Clarissa.
Clarissa. Yes. You know, like with her and her family.
Oof, yeah, that's ugly.
You're having, you told me you're having another one of my friends come on
in
a week or so.
In a little while, yep.
And
he's going to be an incredible story.
Yeah, he'll be good, but I mean, he had a run-in with his family as well. I mean, just, and I guess I'm talking about families, but just like where something really bad happens, you know, if somebody gets,
and what we're talking about when something really bad happens, we're meaning that the young adult comes back to their family and says, no, I don't believe, or I'm not willing to live the way you're dictating my life, or I'm different, or I'm homosexual, or whatever. And their family completely turns away from them and says, you're either the way we accept you or we don't accept you.
Exactly.
And that's where me and someone, and Randy and some of the other guy people step in, and we're there to listen and to let people cry if they need to and let people talk if they need to and help people communicate with their families.
In a group like the one, the underground group at BYU, which I don't even think is half BYU kids
anymore.
But I mean, that definitely offers a lot of friends who not only can be sympathetic, but empathetic, that they've had the same experiences.
Absolutely.
And I'm happy to say that in a lot of these cases, eventually things turned around.
Absolutely.
Got better. But yeah, the threat of being disowned, not from my parents. I wouldn't have that happen to me with my parents, just because of their experiences, because the church overall was good. They're accepting. And my brother generally lost his faith in organized religion from his experiences with the church in the Philippines back in the early 90s. Wow. So, you know, in his point of view, the church is basically useless in the sense of helping out people, like with humanitarian aid and such.
Wow.
So that really disaffected him. But, you know, with him being there and with their experiences, I don't have that threat. I haven't actually come out and told them directly. But I don't have that threat hanging over me like so many people do, like Clarissa's story, or like who will be coming, our mutual friend who will be coming pretty
soon.
Sure. And the group offers a lot of ears to listen to that, or a lot of
shoulders. A lot of hearts and a lot of hugs.
Exactly.
Wow. So tell me, where are you now? Are you still at BYU?
U of U.
All right. How's that going?
I don't know why, but I finished my religion classes before I transferred. I lost over 21 credits when I transferred, so I've been a junior for a couple years now.
Wow.
I recommend to anybody who's at BYU that if they're thinking that they might not believe, just stop taking your religion classes at that point. Because if you can't make it last, you can't make it work, then you're going to want to transfer, and you're just going, those are going to be useless. I think there's one college on the East Coast that could use them for like some kind of theology major, and that's the only one. So just stop taking them. Just stop taking them. Learn from my mistake. One whole semester of religion
plus a semester plus.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the transfer, Andrew brought this up. I think we mentioned that maybe I could talk about it, but for me transferring, I mean, 21 credits, even with BYU being cheap, 21 credits at least. I don't remember the true number. It's like 24 or 23, but at least 21 credits being lost. I mean, that's 8 months of classes. That's $5,000 in books and tuition, however much for just the cost of living on top of that. Transferring out of BYU was not easy, especially because my parents are helping out with finances here and there, but I mainly am putting myself through college, mainly through loans. But I'm also trying to have, I've had a couple jobs while being back from the mission and paying off debts and loans and such. And transferring to U of U has really set me back about a year.
Wow. So do you still do the blog?
Yes, just not as much anymore.
Okay.
About a month and a half ago, I decided I wanted to try to make a like big five post. That's the post that's on there right now from like, March or whatever.
Yep. March 1st.
Yeah. And really the big five, I'm trying to find out the top five historical or doctrinal issues with the church for me right now, that if I was a member, these would be the worst things to know about.
Okay.
I listened to a lot of podcasts. I've read a couple books. But I've kind of been exiting my latest oh, Mormonism's fascinating phase. And so it's kind of going down. So I don't know. I've always.
So you're moving on?
Well, I've moved on a couple times. It was in probably like January. So I got back into it for a bit. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I want to learn about this part of the church. Or
sure.
How do people get this to work in their mind, you know, and get back into it? And I'm kind of exiting that. So I don't know. I've made promises on posts and stuff. I collected patriarchal blessings, actually, like only a few months after I started the blog back in 2010, and I still haven't made the patriarchal blessing post. So I might not be delivering, but I probably should get on there and make a couple posts, especially after this podcast.
So do you still have anybody that hits it? Do you still get any hits?
A couple people right now.
So you have people that you're actually that have contacted you and would like to have access to a network of friends. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes. I guess there's mainly three categories of people who have contacted me.
Okay.
Those people who want friends. One girl right now is talking to me. She just sent me a very long email, and she apologized to me because I said, just send me a short explanation of why you don't believe or why you want to meet up with the group. Kind of a weeding out process.
Come on, Joey. There's no short explanations to that.
No, and obviously not. And so she gave a long explanation, and I quickly replied to that. And we'll see where that goes. And there's another person, too, who sent me an email, and I haven't heard back from them. So there's people who want the group. There's people who just send me emails either because of a post I made, and they're just wanting to chat with me, or mm-hmm. they're just giving me props. Friendly sure. Atheist had me... interviewed me through emails for one of his
things. I love Hemet.
So yeah, and he sent me a couple emails and we chatted for a little bit, you know, we're not friends, but acquaintances at least. And then there are those that other category of people who argue with me. Couple BYU professors.
Keep it real.
There's this one.
Did that surprise you when BYU professors got on your blog?
It's only happened a couple times, and I was actually surprised it took them that long.
Okay.
To be honest, because especially like during my bitter phase or such, I made horrible arguments against the church or what my beliefs are, and I would expect professors to get on there and just tell me how poor I'm arguing
and tear those up. Yeah,
but in the emails, being more recently, especially, it's like we can have a real conversation. It doesn't go anywhere, but I've had some fun, and I hope they've had some fun. There was one kid, I can't go into too much detail on.
Sure. But, we don't want to.
This one kid at BYU, I'll say that he has a disability.
Uh-huh.
But him and me sent a lot of emails back and forth, and he was actually a hoot to talk with. A hoot.
Fun.
But, and then unfortunately, though, there are a handful of people who email me in that category who say they want to be in the group, but they just seem suspicious.
And can't let them in.
Well, in some cases, I tell them that I'd rather they gave me some real concrete details as to what it was about the Book of Abraham, and they never reply and they reply, and I go to email them back, and their email's deleted. I don't know if those are people who, well, no, the way they phrase it when they say they don't believe anymore and they want to be in the group and it sounds great, but then I don't know if they delete their email. I don't know. Just that seems a little off.
Sure. Sure.
It's not like BYU is sending spies at us. But I think there's definitely probably members who would like to try to sneak in.
Got it. So if somebody wants to contact you, is the blog still up and active?
Yes. That's probably another reason why I need to make a post.
There you go.
I haven't made one in a while. When you come in, the posts are right in the middle. Up in the top right, I have a little note section, which I should probably update. I don't even know what it says anymore, but it has my email there.
Good.
And then when you email me, I'll just work through there. Underneath that, there's, I think, the top 10 posts that I like personally.
Oh, good.
Like a list of reasons to doubt Mormonism. Probably a post or two just on my atheism in general. And then, like for any fans of the Irreligiosity podcast, they had those gay penguins and episodes and I love the gay penguins. So I made a spoof gay penguin storyboard.
That's awesome.
I mean, I just posted fun or good ones up there. And then there's of course a blog roll list, which is probably dated because blogs seem to only last about a year or two before people stop working on them. And
except for Godless at BYU.
Yeah, well, yeah, I used to post 7 a month or so, and right now it's about 1 every other month. But I keep up with the emails. I try to have the Gmail open
good.
For my email at all times whenever I'm online, so I see if I get an email right away.
So it sounds like if somebody contacts you through that email, then you try to contact them back.
I recently cleaned up my email, and unfortunately there was one person I missed.
Okay.
From December of just last year, where I never replied. I feel horrible about that.
Well, just one. You're talking one
just
person.
One, just one. I've had about 200 emails.
Wow.
Overall, for people who joined the group, though, like I think Andrew said it was like maybe 70 or so. And he even told me he was just exaggerating. I mean, or maybe he said it was like 100. I don't remember. But, yeah. But it's only about like 36 people. But for everyone that does join the group or becomes a friend on Facebook or whatever, I would say there's probably about one or two people who either never get back to me or just aren't sure.
Or they fade away, or you don't.
Or they fade away, exactly.
Sure.
You know, I usually try to invite them out to, if we're having a movie party or go to lunch, or maybe if we're meeting for coffee, try to get them to meet with several people, not just me. See if they like the group. Because like I said, mainly good place to meet new friends. And if you don't think you're going to fit in, I don't know how you would know that though without meeting them. And so sure. I keep telling people, you know, if you're having a hard time, just come out and meet us at some point, because maybe you'll like it a lot more than you think. And sure. And there's certainly been people who have said that who have joined the group that they thought maybe they didn't really need a group of non-Mormon friends, even though they were becoming non-Mormon.
Sure.
And then they meet the people and they hang out for a while, and a month later they're wondering why they took so long. But
so where are you now? How are you feeling? Do you regret the decision to walk away from the LDS Church?
No. And I think, like we mentioned, we didn't really go into the deconversion process itself so much as just trying to focus on why I would start the blog and why people like me or Andrew would invite people at BYU or in Utah Valley to come out and join some of the Facebook groups and such to get a new group of friends. So I definitely don't regret it. Unfortunately, I did end up telling my bishop that I didn't believe anymore.
Sure.
Props to him for asking about my ecclesiastical endorsement. And I said I was still worthy, but I probably was not going to renew it. And he didn't do anything about it, though. He didn't take it away. You know, he just let me continue for another 2 semesters. So props to him for allowing that to happen, for me to get ready to move on. And the move, though, having to switch colleges, I don't know. When I think about trying to stay in BYU and keeping my ecclesiastical endorsement and having to take a religion class where part of your grade is writing a paper about your testimony, I don't know how I would do it without like some real fancy wording or just outright lying, for me at least, for how strongly I've moved away.
Sure.
So neither option was good, but probably leaving was best. Though unfortunately, that means I am now out of Provo, so I'm not as close to a lot of the people that, you know, during that first year moving away really helped to shape my character and help me find who I am.
Sure, sure.
Still finding who I am, I should say.
Well, it sounds like you're doing pretty well. You know, obviously you've got a good base of friends. Godless at BYU still going?
Yep. Yeah, a lot of people look for the pictures, actually.
I use them all the time for our coffee events.
Yep. I don't know what I did. I think it was like a 6-hour picture spree back when I started the blog, and I just downloaded tons of funny pictures. And that's really what gets a lot of hits, but it's to the point now that I just don't even monitor it anymore, because it's just hundreds of hits a day across all the posts and the pictures. And so,
wow.
So mainly I just focus on the emails that I get.
Sure, direct contacts.
The direct contacts.
That's fantastic.
I have a hard time keeping up with comments too, even. So.
Well, I really, really appreciate you coming out.
Well, I appreciate being here. And I thank you for inviting me and emailing me. And thanks to everybody who helped set us up and for and for the awesome place that we're at. But
absolutely. We do have to thank John and Zilpha for letting us record this at the studio Fist in Your Face.
Yes.
It's always a pleasure to be here. And we appreciate everything that they've done and made this so comfortable for us. And Joey, thanks so much. Good luck with Godless at BYU. I'm looking forward to your next post. I'm a subscriber. So,
One of those two or three subscribers?
Oh, yeah, two or three. I saw that. I know better than that.
Yeah, not too many, though. But I guess I would like to say, though, for if there are any listeners who are at BYU, who hopefully they've got the point across, or I think even you mentioned, you know, if parents who maybe have left the church or have a kid at BYU, and if maybe they know their kids more than maybe their kids know them, I guess realize that there are communities and opportunities even in Utah Valley to meet up with people.
You don't have to be lonely even in Utah Valley if you're not LDS anymore.
Yep, that seventh level of hell, basically, down there.
Well, we hope you have a wonderful evening or day whenever you've downloaded this podcast. And thanks so much for sharing it with us. Have a great evening.
And letting go has not been easy. But I don't need you loving me for who you think I should be. No, I'm standing here at the end of who I once was. Not sure yet of who I will become. Oh, but I'm feeling brave. I got nothing to lose. I'm so beautiful as I make no excuse. And I move to the edge and I take my grave leave. It doesn't matter if I fall, it's time to. Better me.